Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined by Polly Questel and Colton Kaiser again with a special guest from the Liverpool offside, Mark Kastner. How's it going, boys?
It's good.
Great.
Pretty normal over here.
Not much to talk about this week.
It is normal. United are at the top of the table. That's back to normal.
I mean, I think Colton was in middle school the last time that happened.
He's thinking.
Yeah, I'm too lazy to do the math. I think I was a freshman in high school, actually.
Yeah, I was in my senior year.
What's the difference?
There is no difference. Yeah.
I didn't have a job then, and I barely have a job now.
Yeah, so, Manchester United, top of the league, and, of course, our next opponents after finally getting back on top. The mighty Liverpool, the reigning Premier League champions. It's a big one. A game that almost always has meaning, ascribed to it, whether or not it needs to be ascribed. But this time, it bears that extra weight coming at it, this time in the season when United and Liverpool, switching places finally, the way that things have gone for United the last couple of years. And there's added excitement to it now with a potential title race in the works. So we're going to be talking about that today. Anyone want to share their thoughts initially on this occasion, I guess the meaning of it rather than the, nitpicky tactics and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, the last time it's been about a year since these two teams played. There's been a pandemic that happened that kind of makes things a little bit more interesting. But Liverpool were ahead of Manchester United by 30 points last time they played, and now they're 3 points behind in just a year span, which I think is pretty remarkable no matter the circumstances that have caused them. And I'm sure we'll get into mm-hmm. that. And I don't know. I see a lot of we're on a group chat, Colton and Colin and I, and we kind of talk about kind of the banter that's been happening that I don't necessarily ascribe to a lot of those things, but I think I just have to kind of start off by saying I didn't imagine Liverpool being in a position where they're 3 points behind Manchester United at the beginning of the season, but it's just interesting to find ourselves in the position that Liverpool have found themselves in.
I don't think any United fan, if you told them January, we're going to go to Anfield and we're going to be 3 points up, I don't think any United fan would have believed them.
Yeah. Things have obviously gone really, really well for United that have put them in this position, but also things have gone very poorly for Liverpool. So, I think it's really interesting. I think it's kind of the thing that's going to make or break this Liverpool season is this game, more or less, how they respond to being 3 points back off the top of the table. It being United, I think, kind of makes it. Might make the team wake up a little bit more, or it might not. And that'll just kind of be what happens for the rest of the season.
I was going to say, too, I think the prospect of how United respond to playing, in front. I mean, barely in front. They're only 3 points ahead of the pack. But this is a team managed by Solskjaer who basically since day one has been chasing, the rest of the pack, trying to get back into the top four in both of his seasons. I think, seeing where the mentality of the team is now is going to be, on display today and, of course, for the rest of the season. Not today, Sunday.
Really, I think this is the biggest test so far. And it seems like every time we come up to one of these games where it's like, okay, this is the test, are they for real or are they, are they jokers? That's not the word I was looking for. And I can't think of the word I was looking for. But, are they serious or are they unserious? It's this game, right? It's not necessarily a win is the only good result, and I'm definitely not necessarily expecting it, to be completely honest with you. But I do think that this is a test. How do they respond being, like you said, on top? How do they respond being in first place? And, you know, yeah, it in a way, it just had to be Liverpool, right? This game couldn't have come against Palace or Wolves or Leeds or Southampton. It had to be Liverpool, right? This has to be the test. And this is really going to be a telltale sign of, are they serious and are we going to move forward with this, or are they going to kind of fall back, like you said, to the rest of the pack? And, you know, is it time for Liverpool to assert their dominance once again, where they have been for the last, what, two calendar years, maybe even more so. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a big game on many reasons. And it's nice that, you know, compared to the game last year at Anfield, what me and Mark call the Daniel James game. It's nice that, you know, it's not us just trying to play spoiler. It's nice that this game has real meaning for Manchester United and for Liverpool, instead of just, you know, us trying to be a pest and stop them from getting 3 points. And so, you know, I don't know if you could find a bigger contrast over the last 12 months than how I feel about this game and the consequences of this game and what it means for our season than how I felt last year. So it's going to be fascinating to watch.
I think it is a good test, because you have two types of tests. You have the test like this: can you go and beat the big, you know, if you want to win the title, you don't necessarily have to beat all the big teams, but you can't lose to them, and you have to beat some of them. And so far this season, Chelsea, Manchester City, you know, whether you want to consider Leicester or Arsenal as the other top six team, whichever one it was, they haven't beaten any of them. And the other test is, you know, when you go and make sure you don't drop points to the minnows of the league, which right now they are passing those tests. From the mentality aspect, I've been pretty impressed with them recently, especially when you look at that Villa game, which was, thanks to other results, that was the match where it's, hey, if we win this game, we go level on points with Liverpool and we have the game in hand. And right from the get-go, they came out looking like a team that actually believed they were in a title race and could be in a title. You know, that was still a week where all the fans were like, don't say anything yet. The team looked like they believed that. And then against Burnley, it took them a while to get into the match, but there was no panic. There was no anything. Maybe it took the double VAR Shaw foul, the Maguire phantom foul, to wake them up. But they, you know, once they got on that game, there was no panic. There was always our moment will come and we just have to take that moment. And they got through that. So the mentality test, the being able to, you know, win the game that you're supposed to win test, in the last 2 weeks, they have passed both of those. Now it's time to, can we go and actually beat a good team?
Yeah, that's a big test for a number of reasons, because, you know, the last few years, really, I guess, since Louis van Gaal's first season, the narrative has always been for Manchester United that they're capable and often do beat, you know, their big rivals and whatnot. But when it'll be
5 exactly to the day, 5 years since United have won at Anfield when Louis van Gaal was manager. So,
yeah,
that's like the one good thing Louis van Gaal did, is he never lost the league.
There's so many narratives, and there always is when Liverpool plays Manchester United. It's the biggest game of the year. Particularly the match at Anfield, I think, always seems to be in a situation where, you know, you don't need the narrative to make it a big game. But with this particular match, it just seems like, I mean, there's so many different storylines we could talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Manchester United, like you've said, Polly, we haven't beaten one of the big teams this season. And even in the Champions League, we had those two key losses in the group stage late, which kind of, you know, put the asterisks on the two wins against RB Leipzig and PSG early in the group stage. So, yeah, big test for them mentality here. I guess we'll talk about availability now, because that has been another kind of storyline in this weird season, because not only is there the issue of COVID always threatening, you know, players' health, but injuries have taken their toll, especially on Liverpool. And Mark, I guess I was going to give you the floor to talk about, you know, player availability coming into this game and how you think those injuries have affected Liverpool this season.
Well, they don't have any center backs, which is a problem. You need defenders.
Small one.
And some might argue neither do we.
But I mean, at least you have like actual
bodies. Yeah, back. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You have players who are center backs, healthy.
Classified as center backs.
Yeah, whether they're good or not, I'm sure that's a debate you guys will have. But yeah, so obviously Virgil van Dijk and Joe Gomez are out for the season. They won't be back anytime soon. Maybe ever again. I don't know where things are at with that.
Do you guys need Phil Jones? We can give him to you free of charge.
Free.
Jones and Rojo, we could probably loan for the rest of the season.
We finally got rid of our own Phil Jones in Dejan Lovren, who I think got a lot of stick from Liverpool fans, but I think you're seeing why the manager really liked him, because he was seemingly always available. So we came into the season with three senior center backs. We had Virgil van Dijk, who's pretty good, Joe Gomez, who's also pretty good, and then Joel Matip, who's always hurt. And well, he's always hurt. I don't know if he's going to play in this game. There's kind of weird like smoke screens in the media about his race to fitness. So we'll kind of see what happens there. Fabinho, who for my money is kind of the best holding midfielder in the Premier League, he's been playing center back and he's been pretty good. But I think kind of him moving back to center back has kind of caused a whole host of problems for Liverpool. Defensively, they've been fine. Since the Aston Villa game, they haven't allowed more than two goals in a game. But they've also just had a ton of draws, and they lost to Southampton in their last league game. You know, kind of Klopp's whole sort of thing with Liverpool is his midfield foundation, sort of similar to Alex Ferguson, who you guys might be familiar with. So
yeah, I've heard of him.
So
elaborate on him, please.
Yeah. So while Liverpool's been defensively solid since Joe Gomez and Van Dijk have been out, it's been kind of like having to shift the midfield back into defense with Fabinho and Henderson's played center back a couple of times, and he probably will on Sunday. It's moved the whole team back 20 yards, which is not something you kind of associate with Klopp's Liverpool, you know, being very front foot and energetic and kind of being relentless from the front. So, yeah, but other than that, I think like this is as healthy as the team's been all season. Thiago's back. He'll probably start. Jordan Henderson's had fitness issues. He'll be fine. James Milner's back. And then you kind of look further down the roster at subs and whatnot. Jadon Shaqiri will be on the bench. He might actually start depending on what formation the manager goes with. Both fullbacks are healthy again. Trent Alexander-Arnold's healthy technically. It was revealed last week before the FA Cup game that he actually had COVID in the preseason, which we hadn't known that, but that might be a reason why he's been playing sort of poorly. I know that kind of is a conversation United fans have had about Paul Pogba's form, not recently, but kind of earlier in the year. Maybe COVID was the reason why he wasn't playing so well. So, yeah, I mean, this is probably as healthy as they're going to get. Whether or not Joel Matip's back or not is kind of the thing. I don't know. Yeah, and even if he is back, there's an argument to be made that maybe he shouldn't be starting. I don't ascribe to that argument, but I could certainly make it if you wanted me to.
What? I mean, I see exactly what you've been saying. And from speaking with one of my friends, a huge Liverpool fan, the Van Dijk injury, I didn't think would hurt Liverpool from a they're going to start shipping goals left and right perspective. I just said what's going to happen is you're going to get more conservative. Your midfield, yeah. Your fullbacks are going to help out. And there's just going to be more pressure on the onus of scoring a goal is going to fall more onto Salah, Mane, Firmino, and it's going to be like, hey, go out there and score, and we're going to try to win 1-0. And there's only so many, you know, that's just going to cause more strain on them because it takes a lot more. But my, you know, I don't watch Liverpool as much as you do. And what my friend said is, you know, Fabinho has filled in admirably, but losing Fabinho in the midfield, exactly what you said, has been massive. And then when Henderson, that game a couple games ago when they started Henderson and Fabinho, and it was like the midfield just looked completely off, which we know happens as soon as Henderson comes out of the team. Everything always looks so. To me, like if Joel Matip is fit, like I don't understand how you can make an argument to be like, hey, we shouldn't play him and we should either play one of these young center backs who haven't looked great or Henderson and Fabinho. Like,
yeah,
if I were a Liverpool fan, I would not be making that argument.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I just am kind of trying to give license to a lot of thought out there. And I think the argument basically centers around he hasn't been fit, and rushing him back into the team means he's going to be out even longer if he gets hurt, or he might be rusty. Other than that, yeah, I think he has to start if he's fit, because that allows you to move Henderson up into the midfield, especially at that number six position, where I don't think it's Henderson's best position anymore, but in this team this year, without Van Dijk in the team, he needs to be playing that six, because while Genie Wijnaldum does an okay job, that's also, again, you're moving Genie Wijnaldum back 10, 15 yards from where he's best positioned. And yeah, like Van Dijk led the Premier League in passes last year by 250 passes, I think. So it's like it's Van Dijk's the best defender in the world right now, but also he's so crucial to how Liverpool play in the offensive third, because you can commit so many men forward and you have the recovery pace of Van Dijk and Gomez with that high line, and he can pick out a pass like sort of any of the deep lying playmakers in the league. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I don't know if your friend is real or not. I'm going to assume he is, but he's very smart with kind of his assessment.
Van Dijk too, I mean, just his presence alone, whether he's the one scoring it or not, adds a lot to Liverpool's game in terms of set pieces, which has been somewhat of a weakness for Manchester United. And in last year's game, I think it was Van Dijk that opened the scoring off of a set piece. So, hopefully we won't see a repeat of that from someone else.
Marked by Brandon Williams, because that made sense.
he does, like, you think he scores a lot more goals than he does. So his debut was against Everton in the FA Cup, and he scored the winner in that one with a header off of a corner kick. He, you know, scored a set piece goal against United last year. But all around, I just think his presence has been missed this season. And I think the way that he got injured was very moody, just very like heavy. And I think, yeah, the team won both games following the Everton game, but it's just been like, I think his leadership's been missing. Henderson's the captain. He sets sort of the tempo, especially when he's in the midfield, but kind of the organizational skills that Van Dijk brings to, and kind of sort of the, I guess the calmness, where you have Henderson that brings the intensity and Van Dijk brings the calmness. And I think like, the game against Southampton's a perfect example. Like the urgency and the intensity was there to score a goal, but it didn't need to be for 60 minutes. you can't just kind of keep banging your head against the wall. So I'm hoping that now Thiago's fit, who also got hurt in the same game that Van Dijk got hurt in, because of Richarlison's horror tackle. But I'm kind of hoping that if Thiago can stay fit for the rest of the season, that calmness on the ball and kind of his creativeness, not necessarily like creative midfielderness, but just kind of the way that he sees the game can maybe replace.
He bangs around cool passes.
Yeah, he does. But he's also just kind of, he is a calm, like he's always available for the ball. And that's something that's I think pretty underrated about Van Dijk's game, even though Van Dijk's a center back, is like he's always the outlet there, and he can always receive the ball and get the ball to where it needs to go. So yeah, that's kind of And it just doesn't help that Salah and sorry, I live in a small apartment, so my dog is going to be making some noise. On top of kind of the defensive availability that Liverpool has been struggling with, their goal scorers haven't been on top of their game, which we'll come on to, but that's why I think. But I've been talking for 2 or 3 minutes straight, so I'll cede to somebody else now.
Yeah. Kind of switching over to the Manchester United side of things, Anthony Martial has been listed as questionable for this one. I think Nemanja Matic as well, because of muscle injuries against Burnley. But it seems like that was kind of the narrative going into the Burnley match, with Pogba as well. And Solskjaer was still able to select them. So I guess we'll see on that now. It's like we're mostly healthy going into this one. And really, the question moves to tactically, how does Solskjaer try to approach this game? Because, you know, the way that Liverpool's been forced to play because of these injuries, do you think that maybe Ole will stick to his guns with the kind of McFred midfield, you know, ceding a little bit of control for the sake of defensive stability? Or do you think that maybe he'll try and have Bruno and Pogba, both as creators, on the pitch from the get-go to try and, you know, get goals early and dictate the match?
What's so tricky for me is it feels like every week, you know, I think at one time we were craving a consistent starting 11, and now it seems like before every game you have to have this discussion of which lineup are you going to roll out, right? And so it's like a game-by-game basis. Sometimes the starting 11 comes out and you think that it seems like a bad idea and you're not necessarily happy with how it looks on paper, but then the game starts and everything turns out okay. And I'm no tactic genius, so I'll see the conversation there. I just wanted to say that, you know, it's always tricky for me, because sometimes you never know what you're going to get, depending on the lineup that comes out, and then it comes out and you think one thing and then the other thing happens, which is a very broad point to make. But yeah, I'm no tactics genius, so I can pass that to Paulie.
I think he's going to stick to his guns and go with that McFred pivot, and it terrifies me because this is the time. I mean, first of all, because the Mick part of it is just not good, but this is the time to actually go and attack Liverpool. You know, you're not walking into Anfield 30 points behind them with, you know, a team that didn't have Paul Pogba or Bruno Fernandes or Marcus Rashford, and you're just, you know, it not in the face. This is, hey, wait, Liverpool, they're missing. It's not just that they're missing their center back and their other center back and maybe even their thirds. It's if their two best midfielders have to be playing at center back, like, and as Mark said, like, all of a sudden the game is being played 15 yards closer to Liverpool's goal, then why are you putting your hey, let's sit back and hope that they attack us right up the middle and then we could spring them on the counter? Why are you putting that midfield pair out? Because the book is open and written with several chapters as to how to beat that pair, and that's keep the ball wide, keep going with long switches across the field, which if you watch Liverpool play, Alexander Arnold and Andy Robertson love to do that. So that takes away what McTominay and Fred do well. Pogba will be on the field no matter what. It's just he'll probably be playing in that left wing position. But this is the game to really say, hey, wait, like, we can go and bring this game to Liverpool and really test the fact that they have midfielders playing at center back, and we can try to own the midfield. A lot of that relies on Matic being healthy. He is the one that I'm more concerned about being injured. I don't really think Martial is injured. Martial kind of did that thing where he missed a great chance at the end of the Burnley match and went, oh, my leg, I'm hurt, and like kind of walked off the field really slowly in a way of killing time, and also to be like, you know, the ref doesn't hurry you up because you're injured, but also, oh, I'm injured because I, you know, that's why I missed. So I think he'll be back. But yeah, this is like, this is a good opportunity to really to come in and don't play scared and take the game to Liverpool. And I don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to go back to his, you know, we're going to sit back and be a pest to play against and try to hit you on the counter, which, you know, if you're keeping the ball wide the entire time, then it's not a pest to play against. And sure, maybe you keep a clean sheet because it is a very good defensive formation, but you probably won't see a lot of opportunities going forward. So it's really about make sure that you keep that clean sheet, and you got to take advantage of one of the few opportunities you're going to get.
I think too that Paul Pogba's playing so well right now that sort of formation kind of keeps him out of the game, not just because he's not playing in that pivot role, because, you know, whether he's on the pitch or he's pushed out wide, he's just not going to influence the game as much as you want him to, and as much as he has, you know, in recent games against Villa and Burnley. And it seems like, you know, this is a time where, you know, if your creators are coming alive and you want them to perform in these big matches because they haven't done that yet this season, you got to take that opportunity to try and get him involved.
Yeah, and this is what I'm going to say is about to sound crazy, but this is yesterday I just randomly had this thought and I looked into it and I said, does Paul Pogba have more tackles than Scott McTominay? He does. And his defensive numbers are better than McTominay's. And when you filter out the games where he played on the left wing and you put him only in the pivot, then they're even better than McTominay. He does all the things that McTominay does, which is what McTominay is known for. And I understand the defense, that's the knock on him. He doesn't do the defending. My thing is, no, he doesn't track back. But once he gets back, he's a phenomenal defender. So you look at the games.
Are you worried about kind of his ball retention in positions like that at all?
Not really.
I don't really know, kind of. I don't look at his United stats.
He gets a bad rap on it because he had the ball picked off of him against Southampton and they put it in the net. But, you know, McTominay gives the ball away a lot too. Fred does also. Everybody that's not named Matic gives the ball away a ton in that position. And most of the time when Pogba does it, it doesn't end up hurting us. So, you know, and the risk reward, like the reward is much better because of the fact that he does take those risks. But you look at the games, both the City games, and then I also go back to when Ollie first took over and Liverpool came to Old Trafford, that game where there were three injuries in the first half and Rashford did his ankle in 7 minutes into the game, but never came off and spent the whole second half with not leaving the center circle. And United were essentially playing with 10 men, and Paul Pogba put in a fantastic defensive shift that game. And he did his defensive duties against Manchester City both times in the last month. So I think if you understand, like, and he understands, and don't get me wrong, he very much wants to win this game. Like, he wants to push on, win a title. He wants to, for lack of a better, you know, if he wants to leave, he's got to find a buyer. So he's got to show the world, hey, look at what I could still do. If you ask him, can you play the Scott McTominay role? Like, it's unheard of to say, can you ask Paul Pogba to play the Scott McTominay role? But I think if you did that, you're getting a better version of Scott McTominay. And you're not going to get the best Paul Pogba because you're going to say, hey, we can't have you be barging forward and making all these forward runs today. But to just be as part of that double pivot, even if it's next to Fred and playing in a more defensive role the way McTominay does, you'll get a better player than if you start McTominay there.
It may sound weird to say that, Pauly, but think about how many people are out there who think that Scott McTominay can play the Paul Pogba role.
Right.
Colton, I guess I'll start with you with this question, since Mark and Pauly have both talked a lot. Someone who is playing against Liverpool for the first time is Bruno Fernandes, because obviously, you know, it's been almost a calendar year since the last Liverpool game, and Bruno's transfer hadn't been completed by that point. But Bruno also isn't someone who has really shown up and gotten huge goals in some of these big games for Manchester United, especially this season. But going to Anfield and with him as kind of, you know, this spark for Manchester United, do you expect him to put in that kind of performance? Or do you think that maybe, you know, recently is him looking tired is kind of indicative of where we're at with him?
I think that, yeah, you've referenced it already. He's not necessarily disappeared in some of the bigger games, like the semifinals or even games against, you know, top six teams, top four teams, whatever it's been since he's signed on. But I don't think he's exactly had the impact that he has had against other teams, right? In some instances, at least in my opinion, he's looked more frustrated against bigger teams because he can't quite play the way that he wants to. You know, Bruno is one of those players where he's not necessarily good at hiding the frustration, right? He wears his heart on his sleeve, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But he looks, you know, when he loses the ball or when he misplaces a pass against some of these bigger teams and in some of these bigger games, like I said, the semifinals and things like that, he looks frustrated. And so, much like I've said for maybe the better part of a year or two now, if Manchester United are going to move forward and if they're going to contend for trophies and for the league, they need, you know, they need Paul Pogba to be Paul Pogba. I do think if they're going to win these games, if they're going to win big games, they need Bruno Fernandes to be the player that we've seen for the majority of his time here. I do think, you know, he does seem to care enough about the history of the club or the culture of the club, whatever you want to call it, to know that this is a big game. And he also has the mentality to know that being in first place is a big deal and winning league titles is a big deal. And so I do think he'll step up on Sunday because I think he gets it. And I think, you know, he seems to have played every single game since we've signed him. I think whether he's tired or not, he's going, you know, the best thing that you can say about Bruno Fernandes is he's going to give it your all, his all, I should say. And he's going to put in a shift. So I do kind of expect a big game from on Sunday because, you know, of everything that I've said, I think that he needs to sort of prove to himself that he can step up in these big games and that he can be the Bruno that you see against everyone else. And what a better time to do it than right now on this stage, right? In this context.
Yeah, I think part of it is he just teams know, just put a man on him. And when without, you know, Chelsea, when his second game last year, Chelsea just put a man on him and he was basically invisible all game, but he found a way to contribute. He put a corner kick right on Maguire's head. And Manchester City were pretty similar. They had a man just on him, so it was hard to get him the ball. He found a way to contribute. He, you know, a set piece that Martial scored. The FA Cup semifinals, it's the same thing. And when you have Matic and Fred, when you don't have that other big player to take men, you know, to take men away from you, the opposition has kind of just been sitting on, oh, your midfielders have the ball now, your defenders have the ball now. Well, let's just make sure they can't, you know, they can't pass it to Bruno. Let them pass it to anyone else. Let anyone else try to create or be the one to beat us, not Bruno Fernandes. And that's what United have struggled with. And part of the reason that he's done so well in all these other games is when you have Paul Pogba on the field, that, you know, all of a sudden Paul Pogba is somebody that can get the ball to Bruno Fernandes, or he can cut out the middleman and just get Rashford in behind. You don't have to get it. You don't have to go midfield to Bruno, play Rashford in behind. So it's made teams play more balanced, and that's allowed Bruno more space to really wreak havoc on them.
Mark, does Bruno Fernandes frighten you going into this one, or is there another Manchester United player that you think could potentially cause more damage?
Yeah, I think like Bruno Fernandes has been the best player in the league since he signed for Manchester United, and I'm not afraid to admit that. I think what's like I'm just so intrigued by the midfield setup in whatever midfield both managers pick, because recently Manchester United's been playing a 4-2-3-1. Liverpool always play a 4-3-3, and so you kind of have that midfield that's kind of flipped on each other. And you know, ideally Jordan Henderson plays the deepest midfield role for Liverpool on Sunday, and like Paulie's talking about teams that have kind of neutralized Bruno Fernandes, even though he's been useful in those games. Liverpool don't really do that for anybody. Like, you know, Liverpool and Manchester City have played like 39 times or whatever in the last 2 years, it seems like. And they have some guy named Kevin De Bruyne who's pretty good at kicking a soccer ball. And they just kind of let him do his thing. But what Liverpool do a very good job of is neutralizing everything else on the field. So I'm interested in what happens with Are we kind of like, are you guys kind of assuming Rashford plays on the right in this game? Because if that's the case, then he's going up against Andy Robertson, and I'm really fascinated with that. I'm really fascinated with if Gini Wijnaldum's on the left side of that midfield, then that's kind of neutralizing the passing lanes as well. So, yeah, Bruno Fernandes can score. Like, he can score from 30 yards out. He can score penalties. You know, his delivery on set pieces are very good. His movement in the box is kind of terrifying, especially when you consider who's going to be playing center back for us. So, yeah, I am like, Bruno Fernandes is good. Like, I would put him up there with, Harry Kane, Son, Kevin De Bruyne, our own Mane, Salah, like, as just very, very good players in this league. But is he going to be the reason why Liverpool lose on Sunday? I don't think so. Maybe he scores the goal, and that's the thing that makes Manchester United win. But I would say I'm much more introspective about the problem of Sunday than I am kind of like, oh man, Bruno Fernandes terrifies me, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Rashford too, because it seems like, you know, the last few times that United and Liverpool have played, if Rashford is healthy, he usually gets something done. He missed the game last year, obviously. I think he had the back problem from the FA Cup match with Wolves, so he missed that one a year ago that January, and then he scored in the 1-1 draw at Old Trafford last season. And then the year before that as well, I think he missed the one at Anfield and then played the entire game with a hurt ankle. So it'll be interesting to see where he plays. I think if Martial is available, they may want to go with the Cavani, Martial, Rashford front three again. But if, you know, we go with the McFred midfield, I think we may see Rashford maybe as the striker. Or
interesting.
Yeah. With Pogba on the left.
I would, if we were going to get inventive in any way, I'm very anti the diamond midfield, but this is, I would put it in for this one, and I'd put Rashford and Martial wide, because I would want them to attack. I'd want, and Pogba tucking inside to spray long balls, because I would want to attack the space that's voided by Alexander Arnold and Robertson when they get forward. And so keep them wide, and then Bruno and Pogba can come late runs up the middle, but that would be what I would try to do.
Yeah, I think
kind of like false nine. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, that kind of idea puts a little bit of doubt in my mind, just like from like, okay, how can Liverpool win this game? What needs to happen in order for that to happen? And then how can the opposition nullify that? Like, basically playing without a striker might actually be United's best way forward, because I'm just assuming that Jordan Henderson's going to start at center back. I would almost rather see like Nat Phillips at center back than Oxlade-Chamberlain or James Milner in the midfield. But I think I think Jurgen Klopp's very conservative, and he can't win the league on Sunday, but he might lose it type of thing. So, and just kind of like how he always sets up against United. Like, he gives United a lot more respect than I think certainly the fans do, Liverpool fans, that is, over the recent years.
Does he do that at Anfield, though? Like, he definitely plays very conservatively at Old Trafford. But I feel at Anfield, he's been a bit better.
Even the game that got Mourinho fired was pretty conservative. And you had a situation where Shaqiri comes off the bench and scores two deflected goals, and that's kind of the nail in the coffin. In these really big games, like, if he's in second place or first place and he's playing against second or third or fourth place team, he's always really conservative in his approach, and it works. I'm not complaining. like, we haven't really blown the lid off of a team in and around the same points total as us in a long time. I'm thinking of, like, so there was Chelsea early in the season. It was only 2-0. Yeah, we beat Palace 7-0, beat Wolves 4-0. But it's just kind of like, Klopp always talks about kind of taking it one game at a time, but he doesn't. It's just kind of the...
No manager does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of like... Like, if you look at the run of fixture, the next six matches, including or... Yeah, the next six matches, there's two matches against Manchester United, obviously, because of the FA Cup. And then, so it starts with Manchester United and ends with City. So it's like, and then there's Tottenham in the middle there. So it's like, maybe he's looking at this, in the next 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, and being like, okay, I don't know if a point is the worst thing against United on Sunday. I think it is, just because I always want to beat Manchester United. And I think, like, having a, like, a sort of a dominant 3-1, 3-0 sort of performance would do this team a lot of good, given their recent form. But I don't know if the manager thinks that way. And there's a reason why he's the manager of Liverpool and I'm a guest on the Manchester United podcast. So.
One thing that I was always very frustrated by with Jose Mourinho was his sort of downplaying of Manchester United versus Liverpool, and whether we were in good form or not when we played Liverpool, he was usually going to park the bus, especially at Anfield.
Because Jose Mourinho has this weird thing where he just wants to go to Anfield and get a clean sheet. It's the most important thing in the world to him. And it's a bigger win for him. Like, he'd rather get a 0-0 draw than win 2-1.
I think, like, Mourinho was very close to being Liverpool manager before Chelsea hired him. And then there was Mourinho and Rafa, and just kind of like, Mourinho has such a history against Liverpool. And then, of course, there's Stevie's slip where he had the flu and apparently had like 102 degree fever. And he showed up at Anfield just looking like a wreck during that game. So he always wants that moment at Anfield. And I think you saw it in the Tottenham game where he brought on Lucas Moura and kind of voided the middle of the park and kind of just let Liverpool win from that point forward. So I don't think Jurgen Klopp's conservative approach is the same as Jose Mourinho's conservative approach. Not to get sort of kind of all philosophical with the manager approaches. I just think like Klopp is way more conservative than I think the media at large is willing to admit, just because, you know, he came in to the Liverpool position with like heavy metal football and gang and pressing and, you know, Mo Salah scored 44 goals in a season type of thing. But in the moment, I think he's much calmer than given credit for. And I don't think he's downplayed this game at all. If anything, he's kind of done the opposite in the media. And I kind of look to see what the United aggregator accounts are sharing and stuff. And they're always sharing those Klopp quotes about the penalties and whatnot. And I think like what he's trying to do there, and I think he might be the best manager at this since Alex Ferguson, is I think he's trying to direct the attention onto himself off of his players, because his players have been letting him down.
There's a reason he said that after losing 1-0. Like, and it was don't look at our players that we just lost to Southampton.
Yeah, I like, it hasn't been the setup that dropped 3 points at Southampton or got draws against Liverpool or against Newcastle and West Brom. It's just been his players haven't been executing very well. So I think with having a week off, and we technically played Aston Villa in the FA Cup, even though it was their kids and we went with a pretty strong side, he's kind of had this mini preseason that he hasn't had. I know your manager has talked a lot about not really having a preseason. Like, we, Liverpool kind of had one, but it wasn't anything like Jurgen Klopp appreciates. So the reason why Paul, I've noticed like a couple of times I said like maybe Liverpool could lose the title during this game is like Klopp has put so much focus on this last week and a half of like he hasn't outright said like this is where I'm going to get it right, but he kind of has. So if they do come out against United and are doing the side to side out to a fullback cross in, Harry Maguire heads it away thing for 70 minutes, 75 minutes, I'm going to be really worried about kind of the rest of the season because that's just not going to cut it. They need to be inventive. And I think there's a way that they could lose on Sunday and it be encouraging, although it'd be the first league loss in 70 home matches. So maybe not. And that's the second longest record. I think Chelsea's still at like 84 or something. So, yeah, I don't know. But every United game, I think, is going to be a 1-1 draw. So,
I think that's probably... going to score a goal.
Yeah, I think so. I think United will score.
I think Klopp is really fascinating with how he approaches things just in general. And I think he's a really interesting manager. But he always seems to just like, he looks at the big picture maybe behind the scenes more than I think he lets on. Right. And maybe his answers in the media are very like week by week and they're very, you know, Fergie-esque and mind games-esque. But I always think in the background, he does look at the big picture and he's always looking at the big picture. Now, with that said, I think as much as this game is a test for Man United, I also think it is somewhat of a test for Liverpool as well. And I don't want to speak for you, Mark, because you're the expert and you know more than me. But, you know, if you want to win two league titles in a row, and if you want to win back to back, you sort of have to not even necessarily win on Sunday, but I think you sort of have to hold serve, right? You have to kind of stick up for yourselves and be like, okay, we're not going to let this, I'm not going to say the S word, but we're not going to let this go that easily, right? And so, yeah, it's a test for both teams. And, you know, given the context of the last, 4 months, 6 months, whatever you, a year, whatever you want to look at it, you know, it's a test because Liverpool definitely maybe have their backs against the wall a little bit because of the injuries, because of everything that's happened, because of, you know, their current form and recent results. And so I think it's, you know, if I can look at this game as a neutral, which I probably can't, but like I'm just saying as a neutral, I think this is a really fascinating game because it's going to show where both teams are right now, at least for the next few weeks, probably. Right.
And that, like, you brought up a good point about Liverpool's backs being against the wall. They haven't been in this position since the end of the 1920 season, 1819 season when they won the Champions League. Because they've been out in front for the better part of a year and a half. Like the reason why the last United fixture at Anfield, like that was when the cop started singing, "Now you're going to believe us, we're going to win the league," is because they went 26 points clear and thought, okay, yeah, we can actually win the title. And then I think City even dropped points that weekend. So they haven't been in a situation where they're kind of backs against the wall since probably the Barcelona semifinal. And we know how that went. And I'm not suggesting at all that there's going to be some sort of romantic situation on Sunday. Maybe there is, but that's when Klopp kind of coined the famous mentality monsters thing, and they haven't been mentality monsters since the better part of a month. So we'll see kind of how they respond to that. I'm expecting
have they needed to be though? Like, that's my question. Like,
exactly.
You know, it's one of those things where that mindset and that mentality, whatever you want to call it, that sort of culture, it's a hard thing to turn on and off, right? Like sometimes you need that sort of that practice, that flexing that muscle, right? Where you can be like, you know, we are Liverpool, we stand strong, we don't, you know, we don't take shit from Man United or anyone, right? And so I would worry, and I again don't want to put words in your mouth, but like I would worry a little bit if I'm a Liverpool fan because you haven't had your backs against the wall for so long. And that's why I do think that it's quite the test for both sides.
Yeah, I think I think that's a very valid concern. I would say I'm worried about that, but I'm optimistic about how they will respond. But sure. it's optimism and not certainty. That's kind of the position I'm in. So
if I could liver-splain for a minute, I wouldn't, that's not where I would be worried. I would be worried. My worry, you know, I wouldn't be worried so much about the mentality thing because this team has been there before. Like you said, all right, it might have been there. It might have been a while, but the players were all the same. So, you know, what I would be worried about is now is the fact that, all right, so Diogo Jota is out and mm-hmm. he's out for probably only a few more weeks now. But other than that, like that's it. The front three, there's four players for those three positions. And now's where the games are going to start coming. And this is a front three that is, you know, up there in age. They're not old, but they're not young either. And
29.
Yeah. So, you know, depending on where you fall on believing in age curves depends on, you know, how much you think they can contribute. And during the FA Cup match against Watford, at one point the commentator was saying, you know, from September to now, they haven't played any more games than what they've normally played from September to January. Now is where we start making up for August. And now is where the games just, they keep coming. And so I'm not too, if I were a Liverpool fan, I wouldn't be too worried about whether they win, lose, or draw this match. Is it a mentality thing? But is it just, once your gas tank starts to go, there's no way to refill it. You know, there's you're not getting that chance this year. And that's where I would worry if I were a Liverpool fan.
And I think to kind of use that gas tank analogy a little bit, it's like, I think on Sunday we'll see how full the gas tank is in terms of this mentality thing. Because there are situations that could happen that could result in a draw or a loss on Sunday, but I could also be encouraged by the performance. Actually, probably not a loss. I think a loss is almost unacceptable at this point, at home, at least. Even if I'm not expecting to get 99 points again this season, which they've already dropped 18 points all of last season, they dropped 15. So, of course, I'm not expecting the same points total. And it's just a different season, as you're talking about. So, yeah, I want to see how full the gas tank is and how to kind of calibrate the rest of the season from this point on. Because if they look the same as they did against Southampton or Newcastle or West Brom, then it's like, okay, yeah, we could maybe still win the title, but it's going to be a slog. If they come out with kind of the Liverpool that we're accustomed to, then it's like, okay, yeah, we should be confident. Maybe we shouldn't be favorites to win the title, but yeah, we can kind of do this thing. So I know I've kind of referenced thinking Sunday is a make or break, but I don't actually think that. It's just kind of a make or break from what to expect for the rest of the year.
Right.
Because
it's, you know, there is that saying, you know, you can't win the title in September, but you can lose it. And United looked like they threw away any chance they had back in September. but yeah, 6 points down with half the season to go, is far from the end. And we've also seen in this, in fact, I think the last time that these two teams were 1-2 and played each other, if they weren't 1-2, then they were 1-3. Liverpool smacked the crap out of United at Old Trafford. And, and in the earlier in the season when they were at Anfield, they smacked the crap out of United there too. And United ended up winning the league. They went to the Champions League final that year. So I think it can be overcome, even if there is a setback here, because the same way that Liverpool, so you're worried that they haven't had to clock into this mentality in 2 years. Well, at least 2 years ago, they did. United have never been in this situation, and who has on United? Like, how close were the title races when Paul Pogba was at Juventus? Because otherwise, who's you know, Harry Maguire's the leader of the team, but he's never been in a title race. Bruno Fernandes, I'm not sure if, I don't think he was in a title race at Sporting. So, you know, this team points are going to be dropped from Liverpool. They're going to be dropped from United. So it's hard for me to say that this game is
not going to be dropped from City. That's for sure.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say the actual title favorites here is nobody who's none of the teams that are represented in this group.
Yeah, I think like I would say I'm probably more worried about Manchester City in the long run, but Sunday's sort of psychological evaluation will help me calibrate perspective for the rest of the season. And I'm optimistic about a strong performance. And if I'm not, I'll come back on. We'll talk about this again for another hour. But yeah, it is the biggest Manchester United game since I remember that 4-1 at Old Trafford because I was a senior in high school, and that felt big, obviously. But yeah, I'm having a hard time kind of because they, you know, United have been good.
They switched very quickly. Yeah,
but we've never been like in the same spot at the same time. Right. So it's either like one's been playing spoiler to the other one. Like, yeah, the games in 13 and 14 were massive, but you guys had David Moyes as a manager, so you certainly weren't winning the
title. And wasn't one of them like in August?
Yeah, it was like the third game of the season or something like that. So yeah, it's
before we knew it was happening.
Yeah, yeah. And I certainly, Luis Suarez was still banned. Maybe it's the biggest game since that happened. And that was only a big game because of what happened afterwards. I don't know. I'm really interested in what this game has to offer. But like, Jurgen Klopp loves to kind of take these big occasions, like the City game earlier in the season, and just kind of make them miserable. So.
The dirty secret is like every manager kind of likes to do that. The dirty secret is that Pep has actually got like the reason that City are charging up tables now because Pep has gotten very conservative.
Yeah. Yeah. And like that's what really worries me about City because it's like, oh, they've wanted to keep a clean sheet.
Right.
Crap. So, yeah, like I've kind of said everything I have to say, I guess. And I'm just sort of like that meme that's like your head's jumbled and then it's just like, oh, football, bloody hell.
So. For all this doom of gloom and for all this buildup for this game, I think that I forget, maybe because it's January or maybe I don't know why it is. I do forget that it's the 18th game of the season. Like we're not even at the halfway point of the season yet, right? And so I obviously it's a big game and obviously it's even bigger because it's Liverpool, Man United. It's not just, you know, Man United looking to go 6 points clear against, like I said earlier, Southampton or Leeds or Wolves or whoever, right? It is 1 versus 2 and it's Liverpool and Man United for, yeah, the first time in years where it's had this sort of significance. I mean, you know, symbolically, I think this game is massive, but at the end of the day, it is still the 18th game of the season. And so I'm trying to react semi-rationally to the result, whatever does come out of it. But I'm not very good at that. Rational reactions aren't my strong suit.
I mean, look, I told my friends, I was like, I still think we are at best third favorites to win this title at best.
Yeah, and that's like if everything goes really well.
Right, we have to stay healthy.
I think the bookmakers put us up to 12%. Since we took first place.
But from now until then, I was like, I'm still going to, you know, be strutting my strut and going back to the arrogant United fan that, you know, I was a decade ago. But I'm also going to wake up Sunday morning and it's going to be like, oh, not in the face.
I think obviously there's potential for the title race, but really just whether or not it's going to ruin my Sunday is what I'm worried about most right now.
I'm also kind of excited. Like it's only the 18th game of the season, but like when was the last time game 18, 19, 20, 15, whatever it is, was this big? Like I am going to turn on this game and it's going to be, you know, every time I see a ball get lofted towards our goal, there's going to be a moment like before the camera pans over and there's nobody near David De Gea as he calmly collects the ball. Like, there's still going to be that. Like, I haven't watched a game like that in quite some time.
I mean, yeah, I can already feel it. It's Thursday, and I can already know that I'm going to be a wreck on Sunday morning, and it's Thursday. And I've felt that for 2 days. It is a big game.
It's funny that you guys are, like, worried about the day, and I'm worried about the rest of my year. I would certainly trade positions. I don't know if you guys would, but that's fun to think about. Like, I've run through the scenarios. Yeah, of course Liverpool are playing a game, and of course they can lose. And I've kind of like thought, like, okay, yeah, you know, Manchester United friends are gonna text me, they're gonna gloat and whatnot. But then, like, I'm also worried about what few Manchester City people I know. And it's just like, okay, it's just going to be a miserable slog until May. If they do lose. So, that's funny that you guys are just talking about Sunday, because I'm worried about the next 4 months of my life.
Mark, if I told you that the two games in a week, one would be a draw and one Liverpool would win, which would you take for which?
Huh? I mean, I don't actually care about the FA Cup. But yeah, okay. So I'll win on Sunday, and then next weekend can be a draw, and then we can lose on penalties or whatever. Liverpool needs a league win really bad. I'm going to take that and go out to United on penalties in the FA Cup, just because I don't think Jurgen Klopp's ever gotten to. Yeah, he's never gotten to the sixth round of the FA Cup with Liverpool. So you guys can keep the treble. We'll just win the double this year and go from there.
I think one of the reasons that, are you asking me if the winner draw?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's hard. I mean, I do semi care about the FA Cup, but also if there is any form of a T word, R word, I'm still not going to say the full thing. I'm going to want less games, and being knocked out of the FA Cup is going to accomplish that.
And you guys have Thursday games to deal with, which is just kind of a nightmare. Nobody's ever won the Premier League.
Definitely okay with throwing those away.
I don't think we could beat Liverpool twice in a week. And if we come out of Anfield,
I'm not sure if we can beat them once, and maybe that's a little cynical of me, but I'm not even sure if we can beat them once.
I think maybe we could beat them once, because I think Klopp would put out a much different side at Old Trafford in the FA Cup, and we might be able to beat that team. But if you told me we could come out of Anfield with a draw and we're still 3 points clear, like, the way to have a, you know, I don't, again, at best we're third favorites, so I don't think we're coming away with that trophy. Like, at best, the best way to have a more successful season is another good cup run, and knocking Liverpool out of the cup on your way to a run is good. So, like, yeah, if we come out of that match 3 points clear, and that means we then knock them out of the cup, like, I'm taking that every day.
Yeah. And I think,
can we shake on it and just kind of not deal with the next week? Cause I'll take that too.
I think if there's two different ways that my brain looks at this. If I'm looking for banter purposes, I'd almost rather win at Anfield, just because I think it'd be funnier, because I don't think they have any business of winning at Anfield. So it would almost, in a sense, there would be a little bit more Schadenfreude.
That's the record, the whole conversation, 70 games or whatever, 71 games.
Plus, another fun fact is that United's next league win against Liverpool is their 69th league win against Liverpool all time. That'd be nice. I think the more realistic way to look at it is that I would take that FA Cup win, because I don't know if this team is ready to go all of the way in the league. Maybe not like we've talked about, maybe not even because of Liverpool, but because of who else is, you know, kind of charging up the top of the table. I don't know if they're ready, and I guess we'll see. The official answer to that question, I'll take the win in the FA Cup and the draw on Sunday, which, to be completely honest, I don't know if we're making predictions, but a draw's semi what I expect, to be honest.
Maybe I was going to say a drop too, because it just feels like a 1-1 is coming, or a 0-0 or something like that, because of, you know, the amount of buildup that there has been to this game. Kind of seems like the universe would just spit that back out at both sets of fans. But I think as long as we don't lose at Anfield, it'll be a decent result for us. Obviously, having the 3-point lead and maintaining that will be a big deal. But in the back of my mind, too, I'm thinking about City's game in hand and the ground that they're going to make up, and maybe even Aston Villa, because I think if they win both of their games, they're at 32 points. So, yeah, it's going to get crowded.
If it's going to be a draw, just don't let it be because one of our defenders switched off for a second and we conceded another 85th minute equalizer. Like, at least make it be like, oh, it happened in the 59th minute. And I'm not sitting there being like, we had it.
Yeah. Or we're down 1-0 and we score in the 90th to win or something, or not a win, to draw or something like that. Like, if we're the team that forces it, I think that'll be bigger for our morale.
Yeah.
My really cynical prediction, and it's not much of a prediction, it's more of a statement, is just don't get embarrassed. That's kind of, I know maybe that's like a very like kind of cowardly, like cowering way to look at it. But like, I think the worst thing for this team right now is just getting completely played off the park. Right. And just being, you know, told to sit down, basically.
Right.
I think that's the worst possible result. And so yeah, that's sort of, that's one of my ways of thinking, if there are many, to go into Sunday.
All right. Well, we've been at it for an hour and 6 minutes now, so I think we're going to wrap this up. Do we want to go around and do score predictions, or have we sufficiently filled that check mark?
Why don't we just say 1-1 all around? That's what the consensus sounded like.
Yeah, that's what I think will happen. Yeah.
I put in our the Colton, Mark, and Colin group chat a while back, I said 4-3 win with Bruno Fernandes scoring a penalty in the 90th plus 3.
I do think that Bruno will hit a penalty. If Bruno hits a penalty, like Mark said something earlier about like the romantic something, and like the romantic thing would be Bruno hitting a penalty in front of the cop.
It's empty.
Cop.
Yeah, an empty cop. And I don't care about it's empty.
Potentially so that's, featuring a Marcus
that's a
Rashford
penalty in the first half. Because usually it is. Yeah. Sure. I'll take it. Whatever.
All right. Well, it's been fun. And we'll be back next week to discuss whatever the result is. Thanks for joining us, Mark. I know the prospect of coming into a chat room with three Manchester United fans isn't always fun, and that's might fine. Boost your reputation as the Manchester United fan, Liverpool fan.
Yeah, my goal in life is to be every Manchester United's favorite Liverpool fan. So this helps me accomplish my goal.
All right. Well, I've been Colin. We'll see you guys next time.